Welcome to ArtSpeak Radio Digest on CFRO 100.5 FM Co-op Radio in Vancouver. This is the Proximities Edition. My name is Eric Hood, and I'm here in the gallery with my colleague, director-curator Bopa Chai. And we are, of course, living, broadcasting, recording, working, trying to pay rent here on the unceded territories of the Musqueam, and the Squamish, and the Tsleil-Waututh First Nations. I myself have been here for the last 18 years, living and working on said lands. And you were just listening to Bury Your Cowslip by Sidney Hermont, a new song which will be featured at the beginning of every episode with flute, guitar, and voice. It was recorded and mixed by Sunny over the course of a week in late May, and her new album is out sometime in June 2020. Keep a lookout. Tonight, we're very happy to be introducing our listeners to Stephen Hubert. Stephen Hubert works in painting, sculpture, mixed media, theater, video, sound, and performance. His projects form a constellation around the studio, history, networks, chance, and the shape of thinking, technology, and power. Hubert lives in Vancouver and teaches at Langara College on the traditional and ancestral unceded territories of the Squamish, Tsleil-Waututh, and Musqueam First Nations. Tonight we'll be featuring Episode 1 and Episode 2 of Freeze Frame. The first one, entitled The Cabin, and Episode 2, entitled The Sound. And for the duration of Proximities, we're very excited to be introducing Hannah Jickling and Helen Reed of Big Rock Candy Mountain, who will be our resident guests on the show presenting Bubble Broadcast. Each week, they will be sharing their research as part of their Sleepy Soda project, which will develop a special edition of soda with grade 6 students in Edmonton, Alberta. Helen and Hannah will speak a little bit more about the project shortly. But first, Episode 1 of Freeze Frame, The Cabin, by Stephen Hubert.
Hello. Welcome to Freeze Frame. Show where we attempt to freeze time. find out what it is exactly that makes us tick. Freeze Frame is a collaborative venture sponsored by ArtSpeak Radio Digest. I've got my producer in the studio, Meg Hubert. Meg, want to say hello?
Yep. Hi.
Okay, so my mind is totally blank.
Anything can happen.
Nothing coming in. Nothing going out.
Anything can happen.
There's a thumping sound of the tape delay.
Anything can happen.
Don't you know?
My legs are crossed. I can't see anything because my eyes are closed. There's a buzzing of light.
Anything can happen.
Pile of junk.
Anything can happen.
A crumpled piece of paper.
Anything can happen.
My own breathing. No judgment. Freeze Frame. Okay, so got some letters here to read through. Let's grab this one. Dear Steve, I just want to know, how do you navigate your public persona in a way that keeps you grounded? Thanks for a great show. Always a fan, Byron. Okay, Byron, well, seems to me a long time ago I signed a pact with the public which basically meant that as long as I was going to be out here entertaining y'all, I'd have to put that first and foremost. So, I won't lie, my personal life has suffered a great deal at the hands of this broadcast. Okay, so here we've got another one here. Dear Steve, constantly trying to freeze the frame, you know what I'm saying? But sometimes the frame melts. What should I do? Thanks for the show. Best regards, Caitlin. Well, Caitlin, it's my experience that when you're looking for something specific, it never comes, but when you're just like out there with an open heart, there's something amazing that can happen that will bring everything together, you know. For instance, the other day I was opening a can of beer and my finger got caught in like that metal piece thing at the top and kind of tweaked it a little bit. And then I looked over and there was this tiny crumpled ball of paper that I picked up, and it was 4 20s. All like folded in a ball. That's like $80. And like that just happened for no apparent reason except for that I was there. This episode of Freeze Frame was brought to you by the good people at Lee's Electronics up at around the corner of 25th and Fraser. I encourage you to go there and get what you can get. Okay, so this next part of the program is when I call someone who I haven't talked to in a super long time and just see how they're doing and see what's going on. So this person I'm about to call is Rob Weeb, friend of mine from years ago, lives up in Kelowna, and yeah, let's see how he's doing. Yo,
dude.
Rob,
dude.
Rob,
dude.
Rob.
What's up, man?
Rob, how you doing, man?
It's good. What are you doing, man? What are you doing?
Well, I'm just giving you a quick call here, see how you're doing.
Okay. Yeah.
After talking for a little while and catching up, Rob explained to me what it's like for him right now growing apples in the Okanagan.
Oh, man, dude, the whole apple industry, because not even this COVID thing, but previous to this, the whole, believe it or not, the whole Trump and China sort of like trade war.
Uh-huh.
And even, you know how like American soybean producers were like completely, they just got blocked out of China with their soybean?
Sorry, Rob, I don't know anything about American soybean producers.
Well, the same thing happened with Washington State apples.
Uh-huh.
And so suddenly Washington State just was like dumping their apples all over the world because they had a glut of apples. I basically got it. I have a bill down at my packing house from last year.
Uh-huh.
I spent all this money like growing the crop.
Yeah.
And then I ended up with negative dollars from my packing house.
Oh like, my gosh! Like your bill there was so high.
Yeah.
That it literally blew out anything you would have made.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, and you've been growing apples on that property for like 50 years. Not you, but like your family.
Not me, but yeah. So yeah, it's apples are just a dying sort of thing.
Freeze frame.
We need to rebuild the cabin.
Yeah.
And
yeah, like what happened with the secret cabin? It burned down or something?
At this point in my conversation with Rob Weeb, things turned to a place from our youth. A place called the Secret Cabin.
It burned down. Like, the story came out that one of Joel Federson's, because it was already sort of like a new generation, because Joel had like passed on the news to like a bunch of the youth kids from like the next generation.
Yeah, like after us.
Yeah, and one of them got the fire going too hot in the winter and burned the place down.
A little bit of background on the history of the Secret Cabin. Story went that it had been handed down through generations of young people who, like myself, had attended the Mennonite Brethren Church in Kelowna. The cabin had been a forestry shack, probably built in the 20s, and had been abandoned for years until some guys found it in the 60s while hiking in the rugged mountain areas east of town.
And then Daryl Giesbrecht and one of those guys just found it.
Daryl Giesbrecht, that's the name I was trying to remember, actually.
Yeah, Daryl Giesbrecht.
He's the guy who had, like, he was so tall that he would wear jeans, and then he kept growing, so they kept adding pieces of jeans onto the bottom of the jeans, right?
That sounds like Daryl. He was the philosopher, poet of the group, of the Mennonite group, you know? Like, he had this nickname called Luke. So all his buddies...
Uh-huh.
All his buddies, even though his name was Daryl, all his buddies just called him Luke. Because he was, I think he was like a biblical, he was kind of like would philosophize about like New Testament philosophy.
Oh.
And he was kind of like, you know, waxing on poetically about New Testament sayings. And they just said like, you're like one of Jesus' followers. We're going to call you Luke. So that's called off. And they just called him Luke. And literally people didn't even know his real name. They just called him Luke.
Oh my gosh, because he was one of the apostles.
Yeah.
Luke was not one of the apostles.
I remember I tried to start a nickname for you, actually.
Oh.
Yeah, I tried to get people to call you Dusty Rose.
Oh.
Because you told me one time that at your high school graduation, you had a tie that was a dusty rose color.
Freeze frame. To get to the secret cabin relied on educated guesswork. You had to drive up a forestry road and stop on the side where there was a certain branch sticking out. From here, you walked about 20 minutes due west through a dense forest of fallen trees. There was no discernible path of any kind, You just had to have a sense you were going in the right direction. I soon came to understand that over the years, a trip to the secret cabin had become a kind of rite of passage. The first time I went, I had to drink some secret sauce, which I think was ancient soy sauce. After that, I was allowed to carve my name in the wall to join maybe 30 other names. I'm not sure how spiritually edifying the secret cabin was supposed to be back in the 60s when it was founded by our Mennonite forefathers. But by the time I went in the mid-90s, it was a mellow place to smoke cigars and cigarettes, play cards, gossip, and so on, which, if you follow Mennonite jokes, are all things Mennonites do in secret anyway. Well, maybe not Mennonite brethren, but certainly GC Mennonites, the ones we'd been warned about. I've contacted Daryl Giesbrecht over email, hoping to record some of his memories of the secret cabin. In the meantime, I discovered that he is now a photographer, still based in the Okanagan. And on his website, I found a picture of my favorite waterfall, Crawford Falls, which I have visited and made paintings of many times over the years. And now, just the other day, I got in the mail a new phone case with Daryl's picture of Crawford Falls built right into it. So do you think it's worth it to try to figure out who did it?
No way. I don't want to know. I like it ambiguous.
This is Terry Berg. Terry helped put some of this stuff into perspective in terms of whether or not it's worth trying to pursue exactly what happened with the cabin fire.
I like the myth more than the reality. Yeah, well, you know, I don't even care about reality.
Or sandwich.
It's always there. It's obvious. It's boring. I like whatever could have happened, though, is kind of excites my mind more. Like, yeah, Jeremy looks into like the deeper of like what actually happened. I think he has other stories that he can expound upon. Actually, it's the stories I like.
Like when he's trying to investigate it.
Yes, because him and Joel still kind of like, it's one of those things that it was so rich in our past that it ignited all sorts of excitement in us, right? And so as it's been passed down or mythologically burnt by someone, and what's there now, I haven't gone back. I think some other guys have gone back to see what's there, but
yeah.
I mean, I don't know.
You might not
I like it's the cabin in my past. It's like the past is like a vapor trail that kind of gets molded by time, and it doesn't matter. It could, I don't care if it's real or not anymore.
Freeze frame. Back in the 1990s, when the secret cabin was still around, I loved to go there and make up songs. And so, here's a bit of a song to take us out of this first episode of the program. From Rock Band, this is circa 1997, and that's Rob playing bass and singing backup vocals, and my brother Mike plays the drums.
When I saw you, Americans were there. I saw you, pushed Americans aside. I saw you, Bastille's were mine. I saw you, Americans were there. I saw you, I pushed Americans aside. I saw
Vancouver.
Welcome back to Bubble Broadcast. So last week we were driving home from a camping trip and listening to an episode of the Lost Notes podcast. Helen had downloaded it, the one episode about Suzanne Schiani. She's an electronic musician, and we wanted to learn more about her career playing the Buchla, an early modular synthesizer. We had no idea she had done sound design for commercials, especially Coke's Pop and Pour sonic branding from about 40 years ago. And so we were listening to this other unexpected Bubble broadcast, which was a recording of soda being poured, but augmented with these synthesized bubbles.
Coca-Cola Pop and Pour.
It was really interesting listening to Suzanne Schiani talk about the Coca-Cola Pop and Pour audio signature that she created, because it was a way to connect a sound to a feeling to a flavor. We did this online workshop in Edmonton for the group of students we're working with there, and it was called Critical Soda Studies. So we were looking at the way that a brand tries to build desire and specifically tries to build relationships with young people. So Coca-Cola has continued to have these things that they use in marketing called intrinsic sound. So like the sound that a bottle of Coke or a can of Coke produces, like a bottle top popping, or the fizz from the can, or the sound of Coke being poured over ice. And these sounds kind of embody this idea of like the release of pressure or taking a break, a feeling of enjoyment or pleasure. So this week we're sharing our own Pop and Pour track, which is still background research for an upcoming Big Rock Candy Mountain project, which will eventually develop a special edition of soda with grade 6 students in Edmonton. Bubble Broadcast has been a way for us to learn a little bit more about recording and editing sound. Thank you.
As Big Rock Candy Mountain, we've been researching taste and flavor with school-aged children for about 6 years now. We got interested in candy and pop, by extension, because it trades on disorderly conduct, chaos, and contraband. Candy is a point of youthful self-definition outside of the bounds of adult tastes, and candy marketing does a really, really good job of addressing young people. We produce projects in public schools, mostly elementary schools, which are endlessly weird, disturbing, fascinating public places. Schools are also a place where tastemaking occurs, where certain values are promoted and others are discouraged. But what happens between and around the classroom and corporate culture, and how are we able to critically riff within these structures? In some ways, this is a sort of elaborate setup for when we get to be face-to-face with the students again, and we don't know when that is going to be. So in the meantime, Bubble Broadcast affords us time to learn the language of pop, a foundation of sound that can be steered, contested, and complicated with our collaborators at a future date. We should mention that things got majorly halted this year because of you-know-what, but this conversation was started with students, and their names are Abdullahi, Addison, Amira, Antonio, Asia, Bodica, Brian, Brooke, Bryce, Dakota, Daria, Ifra, Jerome, Georgia, Kahari, Khalid, Lamis, Lily, Miriam, Michelle, Muhammad, Morrill, Prasoon, Kobane, Rasa, Salem, Thea, Umair, and Yadidia, along with teachers Veronica Chong and Melissa Andrews.
For this episode, we want to thank Suzanne Chiani for the Fispiration. Big thanks again to Brady Marks for all of her support with the technical dimensions. And to Alyssa Ferrari and John Brennan, who suggested a bunch of artists who are working with liquids and sound to us early on. We want to thank ArtSpeak for inviting our participation. And we also want to thank the Mitchell Gallery and the Edmonton Arts Council for supporting this forthcoming soda exploration. Other Sites has also been a long-standing supporter of Big Rock Candy Mountain, so thanks to them, too.
C-F-R-O 100.5 F-M Vancouver.
And this is Everybody Tells Me from Fortunato Durruti Marinetti's 2019 album, Desire.
Thank you. have told me as if I didn't know. They say you're gonna have to pay back everything that you owe. Everybody tells me, but they don't even know that I'm trying to turn it in. I'm trying to turn myself into a thin wire, a thin wire too thin to hold on to. I'm trying to become traceless, to be always escaping from this, to be from this state of affairs. Become traceless. I'm trying to always be escaping from this state of affairs.
Episode 2 of Stephen Hubert's Freeze Frame, The Sound.
Hello. Welcome to Freeze Frame. The radio show where we attempt to freeze time. Sounds you may have heard. In this next segment of Freeze Frame, we talk about a strange new sound. Okay, so the other day I got the strangest call from my producer, Meg Hubert.
This funny thing happened today when we woke up.
Uh-huh.
I was in the kitchen with Bernice, and Freddie comes into the kitchen, and she's like, "Mom, there's a crazy noise happening in my room, and I don't know what it is." And I go into her room, and there's this, like, very odd noise that goes, like, yeah, so it's like, all of a sudden you hear this very loud, and it just goes high. higher and higher and higher, and you're like, what the heck is that noise? So I go, I lean down by your window, and it sounded like it was coming from outside, so I went to the front door and opened it, and I look across the street, and Letizia is standing in her front window, like, just wearing her underwear, looking out the window. I saw this guy in a orange jumpsuit, so I just assumed it was something to do with this guy, but I couldn't figure out why, like, what the music was for.
And he's gone now.
He's gone.
You can't ask him.
I can't ask him. No, I don't know. I have no idea where he went. He just disappeared into thin air. He might have been an alien, and he may have been taken up by...
Oh, yeah. I very much doubt he was...
Some sort of a sonic boom.
Excuse me. I very much doubt he was an alien. Okay. That sounds like something I should probably investigate.
Yeah, definitely. Investigate it.
Okay, so the first thing that comes to mind is... I'll try to Google something here. Large, let's see, loud arpeggio sound outside, orange jumpsuit, and first thing I'm getting here is Yngwie Malmsteen tutorial on playing arpeggios. Even though I knew this was the wrong thing, I stayed tuned in.
All right. Hello, everybody. This is Yngwie Malmsteen, me. And today we're going to talk about a little bit about arpeggios and tapping and so forth. Okay, the first thing I'm going
to
show you today
is... The more I listened to Yngwie, the more I thought about those notes Meg sang to me earlier. Oh, man, there's so much in common between what Yngwie's playing and what the sound sounds like, the one that's coming from the street. Makes me think maybe I should try Googling Yngwie Malmsteen. Orange jump suit, loud sound. And then I suddenly figured something out. I once heard somewhere that Yngwie Malmsteen used to work for the city, which made me think, what if the man in the orange jumpsuit worked for the city and that sound had something to do with it? Freeze frame. I decided to call Dr. Nikolai Gower to get his help in untangling this provocative scenario.
Hey, Steve.
Nikolai, hey man, how you doing?
I'm doing good, how are you?
Oh, good. So I was going to ask you, so you know a little bit about guitar, right?
About guitar?
Yeah.
Depends what you're asking.
Well, I mean, specific kinds of guitar. Yngwie Malmsteen.
What about him?
Well, what do you know about him?
I know that he's like a cock rocker.
Yeah, okay. Like so he's proficient at his instrument? Is that...
In his style of play, he's probably proficient.
And now, he's from the same country as you, isn't he?
No. We would never, ever bring something like that up.
Turns out Yngwie is from Sweden, and Nick is from Norway. Well, then I have another question for you. So you claim not to know very much about Yngwie Malmsteen, is that correct?
Yeah, I mean, all I know is, you know those videos that he made? And then for a few decades, like even before YouTube, they were sort of notorious because he would be such a dick. Like he would... You know, there were, like, demonstration DVDs or VHSs you could buy, and he would just shred, and then he said, no, you do it. And then he would sort of, like, laugh or roll his eyes because he knew that you wouldn't be able to do it or something.
Oh, my gosh, he's a total troll.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I watched that thing on YouTube called Generation Axe. And, kind of bringing together, it was Steve Vai's vision to bring together the greatest guitar players that the world had ever seen onto one stage and call it Generation Axe. And yeah. I feel like Yngwie Malmsteen was there to sort of represent the classical mode of heavy metal playing.
Big time. He is all about, I can only imagine how beautiful the music is that they create together.
Yourself, you said it to yourself, and you had another blip. But you wish for death.
This episode of Freeze Frame is brought to you by that afternoon in 1987 when Samantha Taylor's video heads aired the Talking Heads burning down the house. Why Can't I Be You by The Cure, and Dear God by XTC.
I had one other question for you.
All right.
Have you ever been out on the street and you hear almost like a large, like a sine wave generator creating almost like arpeggiated tones, like really loud? Like, ba, 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 but slower than that?
Huh. And it was going up like a scale like that?
That's right, yeah.
Because it could be, because it does sound like something that my uncle used to work with when I was a kid.
Uh-huh.
And he worked for the city, and sometimes he had to check, for example, like plumbing, like old plumbing, or if there was like clogging or something, debris in the pipes, uh-huh. They would use this, some sort of tool to like resonate. I think he had one, like a sensor on one end and an emitter on the other, and then shooting these tones through, and then you could hear if it was clear,
uh-huh.
The receiver or the mic or whatever would like receive it clearly, and if it was clogged, it wouldn't hear anything, I think. So he was using this in Halden, which is like on the east, southeast of Norway, which is close to the Swedish border.
Close to the Swedish border. Okay.
Yeah, it's reasonably close. It's just like an hour away or something.
Okay, so this sounds like exactly what she heard. And you're saying that it was for unclogging, like, water lines or whatever. Or, like, not unclogging,
water
but
line,
testing
sewage,
them.
Or I think it had something to do with that, yeah.
Nick,
he's long gone. My uncle died when I was just 5 years old. So I only saw or heard about this when I was very, very young.
Okay. But you remember this. It sounds like exactly what could have been. I mean, that explains the city worker wearing the orange jumpsuit, and it explains why you would hear something like that out on the street. I think that you've maybe gotten to the bottom of this. And now it's also interesting to me that this equipment was being used close to the border of Sweden, where Yngwie Malmsteen is from. And I feel like it's full circle, like,
That's crazy.
I wish there was a way to find out whether some of his Baroque-style playing could have been, who knows, maybe influenced by this type of technology that you're describing.
Well, I guess we have to look at when did the tech start? When were they using it? When did they first start using it? And when did Yngwie, like, start shredding?
Freeze frame. When I described this equipment to Google, it immediately came up with something called the SLRAT, which is an acronym for Sewer Line Rapid Assessment Tool. Here's a short clip from a demonstration video that will help explain the RAT in greater detail.
Basically, we go to two manholes, we pop both lids, we stick the SLRATs down inside both holes. We hit the start button, basically letting the system run its course, sending the sound waves through the manhole. Basically, it bounces off of each other, giving a reading.
These readings range from 0 to 10. 6 through 10 being
good numbers because it's indicating the pipe's clear.
And 0 through 5?
I've indicated there's something clogging the pipe. I'm starting to test. As you can hear, the sound is now starting.
That's what I found out.
That's pretty crazy. I mean, I understand the idea of, like, sound waves traveling through something to be able to tell whether it's blocked or not, but why do they play something like that in a city? And, you know, like, they don't tell anybody, so you're just standing and you're just hanging out in your house.
Anything can happen.
Yeah, it's a bit upsetting when you put it that way. Yeah.
To go out the front door and see my neighbors standing in their underwear in their front windows.
Well, but to be fair, that response is not solely the fault of the SLRAT. I think you'd agree.
Yeah, I mean, that just might be Letizia.
Yeah, probably. But what about if it was Yngwie Malmsteen in the window in his underwear? What then?
Well, yeah, like if you think of rhinoceroses, for example, who are compelled by their biological nature to come to a fire as soon as they sniff a scent of smoke and stomp on it.
Right.
It's kind of the same thing. It's like you hear a vibrating arpeggio.
That happens, and you hear that, and Yngwie Malmsteen shows up for no reason. My producer, Meg Hubert, and I would like to thank you for tuning in to Freeze Frame on Co-op Radio. Freeze Frame.